It's Friday, July 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Greeks prepare to vote on a referendum on a European bailout proposal.
Every morning you do see people basically queuing just to get the 60 euros for each day.
Vietnam and Cambodia's border dispute triggers recriminations, and Black Entertainment Television announces its annual awards. It's all ahead. A new poll of Greeks likely to vote in Sunday's referendum on a European bailout proposal indicates they're nearly evenly divided between an up or a down vote. Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras is campaigning for a no vote, saying it will give Greece more bargaining power in future negotiations with its European creditors. Meanwhile, the International Monetary Fund says Greece will need debt relief and another $56 billion in new bailout loans through 2018. Compounding Greece's predicament, the debt-ridden country is cut off from further European aid after failing to repay nearly $2 billion owed the IMF on Tuesday. Stefanos Kadrangakis is a senior account executive for ACI Worldwide in Athens. His company operates systems that power ATMs or automated teller machines, and I spoke to him about the situation. The financial crisis in Greece is continuing as the referendum will be coming up on Sunday. At the moment, how much of a premium is it for people to get cash?
No, it is actually a big struggle, Sarah. The problem is that with the capital controls that have been imposed by the government, people are only allowed to withdraw 60 euros per day. I mean, and there are long queues, etc., at ATMs. From a banking perspective, the systems are working fine. There are no issues like that. But every morning you do see people basically queuing just to get the 60 euros for each day.
I would think this must be especially challenging perhaps for some older people to see that they have enough cash, because they might not be as familiar with using credit cards.
That's absolutely true. I mean, especially pensioners or people in general of an older age, this is really more difficult for them, because quite a lot of them do not even have cards, either credit or debit, or they have no other access basically to their accounts other than to going to in front of in a bank branch. So there have been basically, I think yesterday was the first day that bank branches actually opened specifically for pensioners to be able to withdraw some cash.
So generally throughout the country, how are banks coping with this whole situation?
I mean, the banks have reacted reasonably quickly, and they have, of course, reconfigured their systems to really comply with the capital controls that have been imposed. So from a banking perspective, there aren't really any real issues. The real problem is that effectively it's no longer possible to move money in whatever shape or form outside of Greece. So this is the problem. You cannot even buy basically from a company, an online company that is based outside of Greece. You cannot do that transaction now.
So that's very limiting to consumers.
Absolutely. It is very limiting. It's not just to consumers. It's also to businesses, because effectively if this situation continues, that practically means that I believe during next week we should start seeing the first shortages in terms of goods at the shops. Because, companies are not even able to import, the basic stuff in order to make sure that they can provide their shops, to keep basically their stocks up.
So that could impact food then?
Absolutely. I mean, okay, it's not a problem that we see now, but everybody, and from what I'm reading in the news myself, I mean, they do expect that if the situation continues for more than 2-3 weeks... then, of course, even food shortages could be an issue, could become an issue.
Okay, well, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I appreciate it.
No problem, Sarah. Thank you very much.
That's Stefanos Katranakis, Senior Account Executive for ACI Worldwide in Athens. It's time now for our social media segment. Americans are definitely getting into the holiday spirit on Twitter in the run-up to Independence Day on Saturday. Michael Lippin has been looking at what they're tweeting about. Michael?
Thanks, Sarah. Yes, those Americans have been tweeting about everything from their patriotic outfits to their party plans and even recipes for holiday barbecues. And Twitter is doing its part to give those tweets a festive flavor by creating a hash flag for the USA hashtag, so that whenever someone types hashtag USA into their tweet, a little USA flag will pop up right next to it. The most popular holiday hashtag that I found on Twitter is hashtag 4th of July with the numeral 4 and then TH. Then you've got a couple of variations of that, like hashtag 4th of July with the word 4th spelt out, and also hashtag July 4th again with the numeral 4. One hashtag to look out for on Saturday, the actual holiday, is hashtag July 4th PBS. Now, PBS is a U.S. public television network that produces an annual broadcast of the biggest Independence Day party of them all, a Capitol 4th. Now, that's an extravaganza held each year on the West Lawn of the U.S. Capitol building. That's just a few blocks from where we're broadcasting right here at VOA. The show has its own Twitter handle, at July 4th PBS. That's 4th with a number 4. And if you go there, you can find links to web pages about the performance, which kicks off at 8 p.m. local time, and that's midnight UTC on Saturday. The broadcast will not be live streamed on the web, but I think it's quite likely that you'll see video, clips, and photos from it all over Twitter and Facebook. The show has an impressive list of participating acts, including American superstar singer-songwriter Barry Manilow, veteran country music, rock, and bluegrass band Alabama, and even accomplished Chinese pianist Lang Lang. Wherever you are, if you're celebrating, I hope you have a great 4th of July, and same to you, Sarah.
Thanks very much, Michael. This is VOA.
Here's science in a minute.
Participating in structured sports can help children develop the discipline needed to be successful in the classroom. That's the finding of a new study led by scientists at the University of Montreal and the CHU's Saint-Justine Children's Hospital. The researchers monitored the extracurricular activities of children beginning in kindergarten and followed them as they grew up, comparing the kids' success on the field with their classroom achievements. The scientists find that by fourth grade, children who participated in a structured sports program were better at following their teacher's instructions and they remained more focused in the classroom than those who did not take part in such sports. The researchers say they suspect that belonging to a sports team or a special group with a common goal encourages children to respect rules and honor their obligations. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, BET hands out its annual awards. A border brawl between hundreds of Cambodians and Vietnamese is drawing allegations of misconduct from both sides and significant social media attention in both countries. Here to tell me more about it is VOA East Asia editor Colin Lovett. Well, Colin, there has been a border brawl between Cambodians and Vietnamese. What is the latest on that?
Well, it happened on Sunday. A group of Cambodian activists led by members of the opposition party, the Cambodian National Rescue Party, or CNRP, went to the border to look at a border demarcation plaque. Cambodia and Vietnam are working on small changes to the border area. And opponents in Cambodia have accused Vietnam of encroaching into Cambodian territory, building ponds, building even a military outpost inside Cambodian territory. But the dispute goes a lot further. The brawl on Sunday, only 10 people were injured, and there was no firearms or anything like that. Metal poles and that such, there was broken bones, but nothing serious. on either side. But the dispute itself goes a little bit deeper than just a few meters here or a few meters there. The biggest complaint from opponents, and it's mostly in Cambodia, and it is largely the opposition that's driving this debate, the CNRP, is the boundaries between Cambodia and Vietnam were redrawn in treaties that were issued in 1982, 83, and 85. If you remember, the Vietnamese army was still occupying Cambodia at that time. They had entered in 1979 to overthrow the Khmer Rouge, and they stayed until 1989. During their occupation, the two sides signed three border agreements that many people in Cambodia feel was grossly unfair to Cambodia's interests and Cambodia's territory.
So where does this stand now?
They're going to meet on Monday for 3 days of talks in Siem Reap, which is the Cambodian tourist town in the north northwest, both the Vietnamese and the Cambodians. The Cambodian government's been pretty silent on this. The Vietnamese government's trying to downplay it. The real activists here are the CNRP, who don't hold any real power in Cambodia, but have a pretty large megaphone, and they're trying to draw a lot of attention to this issue right now.
I was going to ask you about that. How much attention has this received?
Quite a lot. You go on social media, especially in the Vietnamese and Khmer languages. In both of those countries, Facebook is hugely popular, hugely popular. And people in both countries have been tearing into this little border dispute and other little digs at border issues for quite a while now. This thing really went viral. There's some interesting videos that people posted on Facebook on both sides of this clash. And it's getting a lot of attention. I know that our Vietnamese and Khmer services, their Facebook posts on this got, thousands and thousands of likes, shares, and comments.
Okay, we'll have to wait and see where this goes.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Colin.
You're welcome.
That's VOA East Asia editor Colin Lovett. A new study says academics are at risk of attack. Here with more is VOA's Ira Melman.
When most people think of life in academia, one descriptive word normally attached to that is safety. Well, that might not be the case in all instances. We say hello to Rob Quinn, the executive director of the Scholars at Risk Network. This organization is based at New York University. It's come out with a new report saying schools are not as safe, especially in the area of academic freedom, as we might think. Rob, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Ira.
In essence, what's the report find?
Well, the report finds that we have a crisis of violent and coercive attacks against higher education communities around the world.
All right. So let's break this down a little bit. Are these incidents geographically based? Are they based on any political system or the like? And what about numbers? How many are there? And is it up or down from previous surveys?
Well, one of the things that we think is pretty pathbreaking about this report is we specifically don't organize it by country, because this isn't a problem that's limited to one country, a certain set of countries. There's pressure on the university space pretty much everywhere. It doesn't always rise to the level of violence as it does in the countries in the report, but it's really a global phenomenon. The report itself focuses on really violent attacks, coercive use of legal pressures and others, and it documents 333 different attacks arising from 247 incidents in 65 countries.
And what are the reasons for such attacks for the most part?
Well, the reasons for attacks really do vary, but they can be broken out into two categories generally. One is, there's mass conflict problems, and you see this in Iraq and in Syria, where, hundreds of university academics have been killed, thousands of students have been exiled, scholars have been exiled. And in those places, we really, really need to pay attention and protect this space because, if the fighting ever ends and we're going to rebuild those societies, the university space is going to be absolutely critical. And then the other side is we have places where the university is really the center place where the tensions over the future of society are being teased out. And those are places where we know there's tension in society. We're talking about Pakistan, Russia, Turkey, Egypt, Thailand. And there we've got to pay attention because, the future of the whole world is being shaped and how those tensions and pre-conflict situations get resolved.
Can you give us any kind of examples of this happening both in countries where there are major problems and also a country like the United States?
Sure. The examples we have in the report include targeted assassinations of scholars in Iraq, where over the last decade, literally over 400, maybe 500 scholars have been assassinated. And that was a conscious effort by the competing sectarian forces to prevent the university from playing a role in shaping that society. And similarly, we see a crackdown in Syria on the universities in a conscious way to prevent the university from contributing to the resolution of that crisis. In Thailand, just last week, 14 students were arrested because they were nonviolently trying to hold rallies to discuss democracy in their country. In Egypt, hundreds of students and professors are imprisoned, some facing life sentences, some facing death sentences under the current pseudo-democratic military regime. So the examples are everywhere. I think we all saw the example from Garissa, the violent attack on the university in Kenya by Islamic extremists, really highlighting that it isn't just states. It can be non-state actors as well. And we see that also in Pakistan, where people nominally accused under a blasphemy law have been assassinated not only before they have a trial, but while they're in detention. And their lawyers, just for defending them, have been assassinated. So it is widespread.
Rob Quinn is the executive director of the Scholars at Risk Network, who joins us from New York City. Rob, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ira. We welcome universities in any country in the world to take part in our network, and they can find out about how to join by visiting our website at www.scholarsatrisk.org.
That's Rob Quinn. He was speaking with Ira Melman. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Now it's time for our music segment. Black Entertainment Television handed out the BET Awards recently, and the show featured some special moments. VOA Soul Lounge hostess Shauna Renee stopped by to chat with David Byrd about the show.
This week, Black Entertainment Television honored the best of the best for the past year with the BET Awards at the Microsoft Theater in Los Angeles. Here to talk about who won, who lost, and some of the performances is VOA's Shauna Renee. Shauna, thanks for joining us.
As always, it's a pleasure.
Now, this featured music, television, radio, video, and et cetera, but who were the big stars of the night? Who do you think kind of stole the show?
Well, coming in, we knew that Nicki Minaj, the rapper Nicki Minaj, and Chris Brown were probably going to show up more than anyone else. They had the most nominations of anyone else, and they both ended up going home with awards. But I think for me, there were two performances that really stood out. If you were around and in the clubs and having a good time, let's say the mid-90s, then you definitely know Bad Boy Records. They were running things at that time, and they just celebrated their 25th anniversary, and Puffy brought back almost everyone for a massive performance that included Mace, who we hadn't seen for a while, Faith Evans, who we haven't seen for a while, 112, and everyone got uber excited about Lil' Kim. We hadn't seen or heard from Lil' Kim for some time. So,
yeah, she hasn't. I haven't heard her name in any kind of music publication for a long time.
Well, she's been involved in a few internet beefs, as it were, with some younger and upcoming female hip-hop artists. But she recently had a baby. So she's been at home doing the mom thing, but she looked fabulous and she sounded great. And as is always expected with Bad Boy, it was just one of the most energetic performances. I was standing on the couch, dancing along, having a great time. So that definitely stood out for me. And the other piece was the Janet Jackson tribute. She took home the first Icon Award, and her tribute featured the dance piece of Janet. We know Janet is a phenomenal entertainer and performer.
Right.
And a lot of that comes with the incredible choreography and dancing. And Ciara, as well as Jason Derulo, actually did some really interesting stuff with them. Ciara, flawless choreography. She got the look down. Janet showed up. She was there. She accepted the award. She looked absolutely beautiful, and she gave a heartfelt speech, and she expressed how excited she is about coming back and performing and reconnecting with the audience, and it sent chills down my spine. I'm so happy she's coming back.
Well, speaking of people who've made a career in this industry, Smokey Robinson was also honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yes, he was.
And had something to say to the young people about, you know, be thankful for the fact that you, I think he called show business a bittersweet wine.
He was very humbled, obviously, by the award, but I appreciated the fact that a man who has had such a phenomenal career could stand on stage and speak very frankly and honestly about where younger people need to be in terms of their mind, their talent, and their actions if this business is going to continue and black culture in general is going to continue to grow.
All right, thanks a lot, Shauna. That's Shauna Renee. You can hit her up on Twitter at VOA Lady DJ or at VOA _music. You can also hear her host the Soul Lounge. Find that by logging on to our website, www.voanews.com.
That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us. Happy 4th of July and have a great weekend.
An editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Self-government, that is, a people exercising all the necessary functions of power without interference by a higher authority that they can't control themselves, is a core American value. It's also at the heart of the Declaration of Independence, which we celebrate today. Thomas Jefferson, the document's primary author, wrote that self-rule is the separate and equal station that a people are entitled to under the laws of God and nature. It didn't come easily. America's early history is marked by conflict with other countries threatened by Republican government and among Americans themselves over the ultimate form that that government would take. But the Declaration laid the framework for a nation that would endure and grow, inspiring similar independence movements around the world. When war first broke out between Britain and its North American colonists, few imagined, let alone supported, the creation of a new nation. Historians note that even as the fighting raged, the colonists were deeply divided over the future. Roughly a third came to believe a complete break with Britain was needed. A third remained loyal to the British crown, and a third simply wanted to be left alone to raise their families and do their jobs. The 56 men who signed the Declaration on July 4, 1776, cast the first votes for independence. Their fellow citizens ratified the choice, and with it the then radical principle that government should be based on the consent of the governed. While this is the event and cause we celebrate today, it isn't unique to Americans. It is embodied in the constitutions of many nations and observed in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that we all recognize. In essence, then, Independence Day is a celebration of our common humanity.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.